is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, September 8th, 2023, and today will be better than yesterday. Taylor and Sarah are working back in Connecticut. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home in Montana. The big series in baseball this weekend, the Seattle Mariners playing against the Tampa Bay Rays in Tampa Bay. Of course, these are two teams vying for playoff spots in the American League. Right now, they would be the 4 and 5 seeds in the American League playoffs bracket, and that would mean they would play each other in the first round. So this potentially could be a preview series. Luis Castillo was on the mound for the Mariners. Mike Ford gave Seattle the lead in the top of the second.
Green jerseys, gray pants, pitch on the way, swinging a shot off the side of the mound into center field for a base hit. Mike Ford with an RBI single. Here comes Suarez on to score easily from third, and the Mariners have a 1-0 lead.
That from Seattle Sports, 7:10 a.m. Castillo carried that 1-0 lead into the bottom of the sixth inning, and this happened.
Swinging a soft fly ball down the left field line. It's pulled foul. Canzone is racing over into foul territory. He makes the catch. He tumbles waist high over the wall into a table, and he makes the catch. Dom Canzone flashes the no-fly zone in left field.
Yeah, an amazing catch, Taylor. It's very Jeter-esque, wouldn't you agree, when he's going full speed into the barrier there and going into the stands?
Let's let him be his own man, Buster. Let's not invoke Derek Jeter this early on in the podcast, please. Come on. Come on, you. No, it was an amazing catch. It was awesome. He was all folded up in there. It was fun.
It was a great catch. All right, what's the post-game sound we have from the Mariners? You can tee it up.
We've got Scott Servais in the post-game interview. Very, very lively. Let's listen to him.
I always said you got to hit the win on the road, you know? So you do, unless you got great pitching. And our guys stepped up tonight. I was a little nervous there early. A lot of pitches put up on Castillo. The at-bats, it was not easy. The first couple of innings seemed like they had traffic. Then he, luckily for us, worked through the fifth and sixth pretty efficiently. So fortunate to get six innings out of him. I thought Isaiah Campbell, awesome. Matt Brash had a great inning, and nice to see Mooney get through that. But big outs, throwing the guy out, you know, from a catcher, old catcher like I am, you know, game-winning home run, throw guy out in the ninth inning, it's right there. I mean, those are big plays. It's really hard to do. People don't know how hard that is.
So at the moment, the Mariners are in position to make the American League playoffs. On the other hand, for the Texas Rangers, the hits just keep on coming. Adolis Garcia, all-star and the AL RBI leader, was placed in the injured list with a right patellar tendon strain. Rangers general manager Chris Young says he hopes Garcia returns before the end of the season, but didn't provide an exact timeline. Garcia leads the American League with 100 RBI through Wednesday's games. He's batting .245 with 34 home runs. The Dodgers face the Marlins in need of a victory, and Chris Taylor provided the coup de grace.
Taylor whacks one to deep center field. This ball headed back toward the wall. It is gone. A home run for Taylor, a three-run shot. CT for three. And the Dodgers now lead it 10-0.
Tim Nevert with that call, AM 570 LA Sports. That was the final score. So a great day for the Dodgers, right? Well, not quite. Mookie Betts left the ballpark on crutches after fouling a ball off his foot. X-rays reportedly were negative. We're going to get more information about this later today. Betts, of course, locked into this epic MVP race against Ronald Acuna Jr. This news about Dodgers pitchers Julio Urias broke. He was arrested after someone saw a physical altercation between a man and a woman outside an MLS stadium and contacted police. That, according to the arrest report that was released on Thursday, reportedly somebody had videotape of this or caught the incident on their cell phone, and that information, that video, has been forwarded to the authorities. The Diamondbacks and the Cubs in Wrigley Field last night. Tommy Pham came to the plate with a runner on base and Arizona leading 3-1.
As the first one to Pham is swung on, hit deep to right center, going back Talkman, and that one is on its way, and there she goes. Second home run of the night for Pham. That's his 15th, and the big-time insurance runs finally come in the top of the eighth. It's 5-1.
That final score would be 6-2. That sound from Arizona Sports 98.7 FM. By the way, on the 17th of September, we've got the Diamondbacks and the Cubs playing in Arizona on Sunday Night Baseball. The Tigers, the Yankees in Yankee Stadium. The Yankees, of course, have been red hot. But Carlos Rodon was on the mound for the Yankees on Thursday night, and he got pounded.
Fly ball down the left field line off the bat of Torkelson, hooking by the foul pole. Gone! Another two-homer game for Spencer Torkelson. 94-mile-an-hour fastball in the middle of the plate, and he did not miss. 27th home run of the year. Tigers having some fun in New York. It's an 8-1 lead here in the fourth.
And from 97.1, the ticket. The Tigers win that game 10-3. Carlos Rodon, with that ugly performance, slows the Yankees down. He spoke with reporters after the game.
Carlos, why do you think the stuff just wasn't there tonight?
Stuff was a little down, just a little all over the place, and they barreled a lot of balls and just got my ass whooped, so that's pretty much it.
Describe the frustration. I mean, you had three starts prior to this that you were really moving in the right direction.
Yeah, you know, we're on a little roll there with five straight wins, and, you know, just trying to put the next one up and showed up and kind of pissed the bed and was not good.
Ooh, he's not happy with himself, that's for sure. Braves Cardinals playing last night. Adam Wainwright, Georgia native, pitching against the Braves for the last time in the bottom of the first inning. The first hitter to the plate for the Braves, Ronald Acuna Jr.
First pitch to Acuna, drilled out towards deep center field, back to the wall, out of the ballpark. What a missile! Ronald Acuna doing damage. And it's a home run on the first pitch that he sees. 1-0 Braves.
That from 680, the Fan, and Acuna was not done.
Acuna hits one well to deep center field. Edmund going to go back. Edmund to the wall. That's gone. La Bestia. The Beast with his second home run of the ballgame. And for Acuna, it's home run number 34 on the year.
Matt Olson also homered, his 47th homer of the season. The Braves win this game 8-5. Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, we're looking down at a college football Saturday. The College Game Day podcast has you set with they're picking 10 games this week. That's Reese Davis, Pete Thamel, and Stanford Steve. Loaded slate, a lot of fun. You can listen to that on your favorite podcasting application or watch it on YouTube.
We're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravage on Baseball Tonight.
Carl Ravage, play-by-play man on Sunday Night Baseball on just about every Sunday, but not this one, because the Ravi train will not be making the journey to the West Coast for a very good reason, Ravi.
Yeah, we have a wedding to go to. Our one of our bosses, Norby Williamson's eldest daughter's getting married. So I've known Katie for her whole life, basically. So I'm looking forward to going to that wedding and celebrating with the whole family and several other longtime members of ESPN, many of whom are still there, some of whom are not. And it'll be a nice weekend. It really is something I'm looking forward to. It's their first child of four to get married. So it should be a great celebration.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Sunday Night Baseball this weekend, we've got the Rockies playing against the Giants. The Giants trying to hang on to playoff relevance, you know, after a tough series in Chicago. So it'll be interesting to see where they're at mentally. It'll be interesting to take a look at some of the Rockies players, including some outfielders who throw the hell out of the ball in our prep call yesterday. That we talked a lot about that. So it'll be a fun broadcast, Carl, but we're going to miss you. I will say, I'm sure that if you're going to miss a game, that missing a West Coast game as someone who's living on the East Coast is not something that's necessarily going to break your heart. Because it does feel like this summer's schedule has been catered to me.
I will say this. You know, we've been accused of having an East Coast bias. There's a lot of people who will joke that the E in ESPN is for East. I think we should rename it from a baseball perspective, WSPN. We have been on the West Coast seemingly 28 of the 31 weeks. And look, let's give credit to our baseball programmers to some degree. You have Cubs Diamondbacks, which is a big series, and then it's Dodgers and Giants, always a great one to end the season. But boy, the idea that people are saying, well, you're getting a lot of miles. I'm good. I'm comfortable with the miles I have. I don't need to keep adding to them. But the West Coast has been where the better races have been. You know, the NL wildcard race has been great. And the Giants, to your point, have been in it. The only part about the Giants, Buster, that I think we've become accustomed to with Gabe, whether the 107 was an aberrational season, the one thing they do is they tend to show up. Like they play. So the idea that they're kind of down and out and done, that's the one thing about this team and the way they've operated under Gabe. Like I don't buy it. They're all those adjectives you use when you don't have the superstar player, you know, feisty, fiery, you know, grinders. So I wouldn't just count out the San Francisco Giants from the race just yet.
Yeah. And before we move forward, and I've got some questions for you about your leaders currently in the MVP races and the Cy Young Award races. We have this great series going on between the Rays and Mariners. I want to look back to last Sunday's game. We had the Astros and the Yankees, and it's amazing how quickly, Carl, the Yankees have changed the perception of their season. Yeah. I've been reading columns where people were basically saying, hey, this finish will tell you that, in fact, the front office has been doing good things behind the scenes because you've got Jason Dominguez and you have Austin Wells and you have other young players, you know, stepping up at the end of the year. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know if it's going to change what Hal Steinbrenner thinks when he makes choices. But, man, their season's going to look a lot different if they wind up finishing in fourth place ahead of the Red Sox. And, by the way, those two teams are going to meet next week. Rather than, say, finishing 10 games under 500 with their first losing season since 1992. They did feel different.
Oh, my gosh. 180-degree difference. No, they absolutely did. They felt different because they looked different. You know, they got younger, in a sense, overnight. We were there. We saw Dominguez, hit a homer against the Astros. There are about five of those young kids. And, you know, the way this works, let's say three of them pan out and become everyday starters next year. That's a significant literal change. They also made some adjustments in their rotation. Clark Schmidt's been really good. Michael King is now a starter. And every step he takes towards that, it certainly, at least in the short term, makes you feel a lot differently about their pitching, which has been a big question, and certainly moving into next year. So to me, they've changed radically. And I was listening to, Steve Phillips yesterday on MLB Network Radio and others, this idea that they're still alive in this race. He was, he was very adamant about, well, no, they're not. And I heard others on the network say, no, they're really not. And what happens is in a game like last night where it feels like it's a game you should win and Rodon's on the mound and you kind of get pounded, you realize it's not a question of They have to win as many games as they can. Other teams have to lose. That combination just becomes very, very difficult. That being said, there is an entirely different perception. I saw Aaron Judge come out yesterday and say, Aaron Boone is the guy. I want him back. You're going to make a commitment like you've done to Aaron Judge. His words carry a lot of weight.
Yes.
You tell me, Buster, who are you taking, Aaron Judge or the outside, the
talk
outside
radio
groups
world
that are going to come in? Well, even that, or even the people that, you know, Hal had suggested, we're going to do a full, overview of our organization. Is it Aaron Judge or a third party doing the full overview? It's Aaron Judge.
Yeah, I agree with you that Aaron's words are going to carry a lot of weight. I remember Hal Steinbrenner speaking with reporters in spring training, and he talked about how he'll speak to players on the team, and a particular Judge, to get their feedback on, you know, players like Anthony Volpe, for example. I remember him being very specific in March, saying, you know, Aaron Judge says this kid has the presence and he can handle shortstop, so he's going to buy into what he says. I do feel like, in a weird sort of way, that this this race between the Yankees and Red Sox for fourth place is actually going to have some relevance in what we see in the offseason. Like, I think it's going to shape the perception of how, you know, the year played out for these two teams.
I think that Alex Cora has again distinguished himself as a guy that can get the most out of the least. And I don't mean that like they have less talent than the Royals or other teams. I just mean, when you think about the contenders this year, Gabe Kapler is a similar situation. They just don't have the star power. They don't have the depth. They don't have the pitching that these top tier teams do. And yet they were in the race for a significant amount of time. The Giants, to me, are still very much in a race. But it should serve as a reminder, at least in Boston, that with a couple of significant additions, with the development of a guy like Casas and Duran, like, you're close. So when you're close, operate like a major market team that's close. Go make some moves. The Yankees are darn close, you know. And I know I said this during either on our meeting or during our games. You know, there's such a fine line between where the Yankees are and, say, where the Rays are, because you can see, like, there are a lot of teams you can see, if things went right, they're going to be in contention. And the Yankees were one of those teams. They lost Judge for a long time. Rodon was hurt and didn't really work out. But Cole's been outstanding. They got younger. They needed to do that. They probably waited too long to do that. But, boy, there are so many good ingredients there that, again, give me an off season and give me a full season of healthy Aaron Judge. Give me a full season of Jason Dominguez. Give me a full season of Wells. As you said on our podcast last week, just give me some more left-handed thump. And they have some of that now with those guys. We're in a really good spot. You know, they lost Rizzo. This team is built to win. And it wasn't like it was built badly. Everything went wrong for them. But now that they've made these changes, you can see the future is pretty darn bright. You know, Cole's, I know we're transitioning, but Cole's a guy that's going to win the Cy Young this year. And that's what you want out of that guy. You look at what Scherzer and Verlander did the other day against each other. Max Scherzer is on the tail end of a Hall of Fame career. Verlander's still solid. Cole's better than both of them. Like, that, we're building around that guy. We're in great shape. So, yeah, it's a huge series for their futures. And also for the future of the American League East. Like, what will 24 look like? You know, are the Rays still the team to beat? Have the Blue Jays made enough moves? Or are we going to go back to the Yankees and the Red Sox? And are the Orioles now the Atlanta Braves of the American League for the next 5 years? Right. So it's an interesting division. It's an interesting league for sure.
Yeah, Toronto now in playoff position as well.
Yeah.
You know, their pitching potentially could be a factor in the postseason. You mentioned Gerrit Cole. It looks like he's going to win the American League Cy Young Award. I would co-sign on that. It feels like that there's a gap between him and the others in that competition. Yes?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think the National League is a little closer than the American League. I think Cole has separated himself for sure. And I won't jump to the MVP, but I think the way that he has he has sort of in the middle of this storm that's been going on around the Yankees been like as consistent a starter as you can find. And look, that's great. You can block out all the other noise. You want the ace to go out there and put his team in a position to win every time. And Cole has done that. And Cole had some down, you know, he had some down games last year where you're like, is he coming back? Can he be that guy? And look, he has shown on and, as you know, off the field, he is a leader. He's a leader in that clubhouse. He's a leader on the mound. He is a critical guy and worth the money that they invested in him. I think he's the Cy Young clear favorite in the American League.
Yeah, Stanton has gotten a lot of credit. Giancarlo Stanton has gotten a lot of credit, and I think rightly so, for how he's handled the situation in New York. He's gotten booed. He's never run. He's never hit. He's owned up to everything. He's answered every question. Gerrit Cole's been the same way. Like, he has totally embraced all that comes with New York, the good and the bad. You know, the criticism when he hasn't pitched well in big games. And so, yeah, I agree with you. He's the front runner. National League Cy Young is very interesting, because you've got Justin Steele, the Cubs, having his breakout season. He's in the top three. Blake Snell, I think you can make a strong case for, the Padres left-hander who leads the league in ERA. And then there's Spencer Strider, who I think you would agree with me. He's easily the most dominant starter in the National League, but his ERA is a run higher than Steele and than Snell. Strider is going to wind up potentially with 300 strikeouts this year, but he has had games where he's gotten lit up. When he's been bad, he's been really bad, which sort of skews his numbers. And on the other hand, I think if you were to, you know, poll general managers in the National League and say, which starter would you like in the National League, he might be the first guy taken. How do you view that race?
It's an interesting one, because again, the people that vote on this oftentimes correctly, I think, fall on the sword of numbers, and the sword of numbers will probably point to Blake Snell. If you were to eliminate some of the numbers, but not all of them, you can certainly make the case. And then the emotional side of, well, have you seen what Justin Steele has done and where the Cubs have kind of come from? In Snell's case, we all expected the Padres to win the West. That's obviously didn't happen, but it's certainly not because of what Snell did. In Steele's case, he, along with other guys on that team, whether it's Morel coming off the bench to hit homers, David Ross's managing ability. I mean, boy, does anybody look better as a manager than David Ross does this year? There were a lot of questions about Rossi as a manager and being a first-time manager and how he's going to handle it. I think he's put himself in a position to win the Manager of the Year award in that league, and also have a really strong and long future in Chicago. Kodai Senga has been really good for a terribly disappointing Mets team. We saw Strider when he's right, he's the best. I fall back on the impact on your team, which you can't necessarily quantify in some of those XFIP numbers and those types of things, because what Steele has done is he's lifted the organization. He's been a guy that continuously goes out and performs at a high level. He rests a bullpen. If you look around baseball now, a lot of these teams have bullpens that are taxed. The Texas Rangers bullpen is dead because they're not getting innings from their starters, and Steele gives his team innings. So there's like an unquantifiable, even though somebody who votes may say he pitches, he gives you 6 2/3, whatever that number is in the end. And that helps a bullpen. That's like really important for a team that's trying to, and I will go back to, how is the team doing? And I know it's an individual award, but I do think that there is an impact that you have that sometimes is not necessarily counted the same way some of those other statistics are. And, you know, that's why I would certainly still think this is a wide open race. And Justin Steele is that horse that's closing down the backstretch and has a chance to pass Blake.
So just an aside, how the hell is it that the San Diego Padres lead the National League in ERA as a team and they're 20 games out of first place?
With the names that they have on offense, it makes no sense. I mean, with four potential Hall of Famers offensively, that have been unable to get the job done. It doesn't make any sense, Buster. It makes no sense at all. That whole thing doesn't make any sense. You know, I remember when we sat in Bob Melvin's office 2 years ago, right? And we talked about analytics and his kind of reference to, well, it's all baked in. Well, this particular year for the Padres was you put the turkey in the oven on Thanksgiving and you try to bake the turkey and you take it out and like you can't understand it. It's like Christmas vacation. Is you cut it open and poof, there's nothing there. It doesn't make any sense. It didn't gel. And maybe it just speaks to the fact that chemistry, the unquantifiable aspect of a major league team, is significant, because just having the names and the players and the backs of the baseball card doesn't always work.
No, and I think you'd agree with me. I heard enough backstories that before the 2024 season, Padres have to get on the same page. I mean, they're pulled in so many different directions. There are disagreements. You know, this guy doesn't like this guy. They got to get on the same page for next year. This year was a total disaster. You know, not only relative of expectations and performance, but I think the fact that they couldn't figure it out over the 6 months is extraordinary. They have to get on the same page for next year. National League MVP in your eyes right now. Of course, you know, we had going into last weekend, Mookie Betts was considered to be the favorite in the National League. Ronald Acuna Jr. goes into LA, just puts on a show. You got Freddie Freeman in that race. Matt Olson has gone back to hitting home runs for the Braves. Who would you right now top four National League MVP?
Yeah, and down the stretch they come. Right. I think Acuna and Betts have separated themselves. I've always wondered, and I know during our telecasts when we had Atlanta, asking Coney, Eduardo, and you, like, wait, why is Matt Olson not being considered? And then you kind of get into the defensive metrics, et cetera. But there was a time Matt Olson was by far the best home run hitter in baseball. You know, with all due respect to the other guys putting up the numbers, Shohei, it's like Matt Olson was the guy in Atlanta for a long time. And I don't know if I'm still, you know, stuck on his transition into the Atlanta Braves first base position, replacing an absolute legend in Freeman, who's out on the West Coast doing Matt Olson type things, especially when it comes to just getting on base and hitting doubles. I think Acuna, to me, is still the guy that I would put slightly ahead of Mookie. I do think that the base stealing in this new rule era is a critical thing, and maybe it's in the postseason. And let's not forget, when the Dodgers won the World Series, what was the difference? What was one of the significant differences for LA's success? It was Mookie Betts' base running, you know, the secondary lead, and all the things that Mookie Betts did. Acuna does all of those things, and Mookie doesn't run now. Well, it'd be interesting in the postseason if he starts to do a little bit more of that, like in a sense, I don't need to do it. We're way ahead. We're going to win our division, but just wait. I got that in my back pocket. Because Mookie's got a lot of back pockets, I think. He's got a lot of things that he can do that sometimes, you know, when he doesn't need to, I'm not going to do them now. But I have Acuna slightly ahead. I think it's an historical season. I think his story is incredible, coming back from the terrible injury. The Braves have been the best team. So it's slight, and I'm not going to look at the series in L.A. where he hit homers and Mookie Betts was like, whoo. Wow, you know, you could read the lips and that stuff. I think Acuna's in a I just think he's had a different season, and I would probably put him ahead of Mookie right now, but very close. And credit to Mookie, because for a while it was over. It was Ronald Acuna's MVP. That was it. And all of a sudden it's not that way, and Mookie's war is even higher if you're going to just die on the hill of war.
Well, what's interesting is Betts is leading Acuna significantly in wins above replacement, 7.9. Yeah. Acuna is at 6.8. If some writers fall back on that, then Betts is going to be the guy who wins. You mentioned the numbers, you know, the runs. I mean, think about some of the numbers being put up by these MVP candidates. Ronald Acuna Jr., 125 runs, 88 RBI as we come down the stretch. Mookie needs one more RBI for 100. He's got 118 runs. Freddie Freeman, 112 runs, 91 RBI. Matt Olson, Carl, 109 runs, 116 RBI. So I know, you know, when we were around the Braves a couple weeks ago in San Francisco, the players were telling me that no one talks about numbers on in that group except for one, and that is Matt Olson getting to 50 home runs, and it looks like that's going to happen. And it looks like he's going to wind up being the major league leader in home runs at the end of the year, because Shohei Ohtani's been on the shelf, but he's still, in your eyes, the front runner for American League MVP, yes?
Yeah. Yes, I don't think there's any doubt. You know, the WAR is what, twice anybody else's?
Right, exactly.
He's still sitting there at 10. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to get hung up on the fact that he's not playing now. Look, there's nobody that does what he does in the history of baseball, and he was doing it at a higher level than he's done it before, and he's won. You know, he's won MVP. So I just think sometimes we try to figure out disqualifiers when it comes to Ohtani, and this is separate from a teammate. This is separate from the contractual demands. This is separate from the Angels screwing up the entire trade deadline. There's still nobody like him. There's no one who was able to do both things at that level and even close. So I think if you just parse it out, it's not a conversation. We keep trying to find ways to make it a conversation. We keep trying to give credit to other guys. Judge broke a record, therefore we're going there, you know. And he probably wasn't as valuable, but he had that year. Look, he's the MVP in the American League. It's, to me, that's not even a conversation.
Yeah, I always go back to, and I've told the story in the podcast before about how Eduardo has gone in over the last 6 weeks, gone into manager meetings and asked the managers, hey, if you could take one player in the big leagues, who would you take? And I remember Dusty Baker kind of looking at him with the, like, it's Ohtani. Like, because Ohtani generates so much production. I would say this, Carl, if Shohei Ohtani ever asked me for my opinion, and why would he ever do that? I would tell him, I mentioned the San Diego Padres before they go into 2024, they need to get on the same page. Shohei Ohtani needs to do a better job being on the same page with the folks around him, whatever organization he lands with in 2024. I think his quality of life will be better. I think he'll enjoy it a lot better. And this conversation that's been burbling toward the end of the year and been borne out by the fact that the Angels keep on getting asked by reporters, hey, what's happening with Ohtani? What's his elbow situation? What's he going to do surgery-wise? And the Angels are like, we don't know. Like, it's all being run by Ohtani's camp, which is totally fair. But there's been so little communication, it feels like, there. That needs to get better going forward. And it can't just be Ohtani says he's going to pitch on these days, and his future employer, you know, he just informs them. There has to be more collaboration than I feel like there's been with the Angels. No doubt about that. Before you go, I want to ask you about, this weekend series, Mariners and Tampa Bay. You know, you and I have talked about the possibility of a Cubs and Philly series, which would be phenomenal. We also might have a Mariners and Rays series, which would also be phenomenal. Luis Castillo, Tyler Glasnow. You know, these are guys who are big stage guys. That would be a fun series.
There's no doubt. I mean, that's been the best part of this. Glasnow reminded everybody, and I'm a huge Glasnow fan.
Yep.
When he's right, he is the best pitcher in baseball. He does things with the baseball, his size, his presence. When his curveball was working the other day, like, forget it. Like, that game is over. He doesn't lose that game. And, you know, his injury this year really set them back. But the fact that he's going to be out there in game one, they're going to win that game very likely. And then you had Castillo yesterday, who was unbelievable. The Mariners have kind of regained their footing. And because the way the Astros are playing, they may not win the division. But boy, that's a heck of a team. Their bullpen is strong. I think they used, what, three or four guys the other day. They can go pretty deep in their bullpen. Julio carried him for a while. Like, if Julio had been this way the entire year, he's the MVP in the American League, or at least he's the guy behind Shohei. That's a really good, interesting series. I tell you, a guy that doesn't, at least I don't think nationally, and I'm sure the Mariners will tell you, well, this is something you can say about our entire team, but Scott Servais, I don't think, gets the credit that he deserves as a manager. And, you know, you talk about clubhouse and chemistry and all that stuff. You know, when they came east, he had He had a member of the Run DMC group phone in, Zoom in with him, and he's all dressed up, and he's got his bling on and his hat. I know Julio had bought the entire team, Adidas outfits. Those are the types of things that make a significant difference. And I don't think he necessarily gets the credit that he deserves in that way. So I just wanted to kind of give a nod to service and what he does. It's a tight-knit clubhouse. You know, we've spent some time on this podcast talking about the Padres having to get it together. Ohtani having to kind of immerse himself the way that Aaron Judge does with his team as a leader, both on and off the field. The Mariners have that. The Cubs have that stuff. So,
yep.
Yeah, any Mariners Rays series, Kevin Cash does the same thing year in, year out. Alex Cora, year in, year out. That's the theme of this one for me is, chemistry may suck as a seventh grader, but when you get into your professional environment and you're in a clubhouse, it's the most important ingredient there can be. Dusty helps with the chemistry. Those things matter.
Have you seen the movie Oppenheimer yet?
I have not. It's funny because my wife, Chris, just said that so-and-so, we have two friends, just saw Oppenheimer. Unbelievable. They said it was incredible. And I keep hearing about it. We're going to see it. I do hear that it's amazing.
Okay, so the lead actor, and I hope I pronounce his first name correctly, Cillian Murphy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing how much he and Tyler Glass now, their faces are alike.
Oh, I know.
Like,
oh. Yeah. He knows that. So you know,
try to wipe that out of your mind as you watch this movie, Carl.
well, I know Cillian knows that. And we watched, you know, Cillian, just as a quick aside, from most of the, I'm sure people on the podcast know it, but, you know, he was the star of Peaky Blinders. And he's very well aware, because I saw an interview with him where somebody said, do you follow baseball? And he said, well, I don't, but I know that guy and I don't throw the baseball like he does. He knew right away that the interviewer was going with Tyler Glasnow. It's the same guy, although Glasnow is about a foot and a half taller than Cillian is.
Right, exactly. Right, Carl. Well, have fun this weekend. Well deserved.
Thank you.
Because you have worked your butt off during the course of the summer between College World Series, Little League World Series, travel to the West Coast on Sunday Night Baseball. Hope you have a good time.
Thanks, Buster. Enjoy the game. I'm the luckiest guy on the world when it comes to work. So thanks. Appreciate you, buddy.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how you doing on this Friday?
I'm doing great, Buster. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, getting ready to go to San Francisco, see a little Rockies, see a little Giants, see if the Giants can hang in there in the National League wild card race. But before we get to that, I know a team that you watch closely because Julio Rodriguez is one of the players you love to watch. They're having this big series against the Tampa Bay Rays. What are you seeing in the Mariners right now as we come down the stretch?
I mean, you know, August was absolutely Julio's month, and he's been really, really good in August, obviously, and since. But I think we need to talk a little bit about Teoscar Hernandez, who has also been really, really good for them on a long hitting streak now, I believe up to 16 games, perhaps. So kind of spanning the end of August and then now into September. But the question for them has been their bullpen. We saw it struggle during that series with the Reds earlier this week. But yesterday, that 1-0 win, the bullpen was perfect. So they're certainly a team that I think is going to be really dangerous. We saw how good Luis Castillo was last night and has been all year. And that pitching overall has been so, so good. The starting pitching. So I think hopefully in October, that will be enough for them to figure out how that bullpen goes together.
Yeah, I think Luis Castillo showed yesterday in those six strong innings against Tampa Bay. Reminds everybody in a postseason game, like he's a guy. Like he absolutely feels like he's one of those guys who could lead his staff. Before we get to the numbers game, just a quick question that I asked Carl before. In the world, do the San Diego Padres, are they not in playoff position when they lead the National League in team pitching ERA, Sarah? Like that does not compute for me.
You know, it is just the weirdest season we've seen. I mean, I know they had the expectations very similar to the Mets, and I know that they've been disappointing from that standpoint. But even if you look statistically, as you're saying, there are so many aspects that have been really good and so many that have been so puzzling. The fact that they are on pace to have one of the worst records ever in one-run games, which, of course, gets the pitching right. How do you have any notable record in one-run games? Play a lot of them, have good pitching, certainly helps. And, of course, they haven't won the extra inning game yet, which feels like it should just be fluky, but they're one away from tying the record for that for most extra inning losses. Most losses in extras to begin the season. So they're playing with these close games that just hasn't gone right. But whatever it is, I really hope that next year is better for them.
Right. Let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is five. So the Astros had quite the series earlier this week against the Rangers. And during that series, they had five or more home runs in three straight games. That's type of the longest streak in MLB history, with the 2020 Yankees, 2019 Yankees, and 1977 Red Sox. And that streak is still active, so they could set a record tonight, theoretically. And either way, it was quite the onslaught. They had 16 home runs over those three games, which was tied with the 2019 Nationals, 2019 Yankees, and those 77 Red Sox was second most in the three-game span, behind only the 2020 Yankees, who had 19 over that three-game stretch. However you slice it, a ton of home runs. It really felt like the Astros sort of, I know that they haven't been exactly who we've come to expect of them the entire season, but that series, that was the Astros we have come to expect.
Number two
is 105.7. So we have the Rockies and the Giants on Sunday baseball this weekend, as you mentioned. And Brenton Doyle, the center fielder for the Rockies, is someone I really want people to pay attention to. And I know people may not be super aware of him, so that's why we're talking about 105.7. So he made a throw to hold a runner in the ninth inning on Saturday, last Saturday. That was the fastest track throw by any outfielder under Sagast, which goes back to 2015. The prior record had been set in April of 2016. By Aaron Hicks at 105.5. So that stood for a really long time. And then he uncorked 105.7. He also has six assists at least 98 miles an hour this season, which is two more than anyone else has had in a single season under Sagast. So that arm has been really, really fun to watch. The Rockies have certainly prevented some runs, thanks, Sam.
Number one
is two for the two home runs that Ronald Acuna Jr. hit last night. You talked about teams that have had some bullpen issues or some pitching issues of late, like I was noting with the bullpen, the Mariners earlier. And the Braves pitching really didn't hold up during this series against the Cardinals, whether it's, you know, kind of doldrums of September or issues they've had in personal bullpen all year. We saw some of that. But yesterday, what a game from Ronald Acuna Jr. Leads off the game with a 115.3 mile an hour, 16 degree screaming line drive home run. And then he hits another later in the game. So he has 12 career multi-homer games at the leadoff spot. That is two more than anyone else in baseball history before turning 26. The anyone else on that list is Mookie Betts with 10, which is notable because Mookie is the all-time leader in games with two home runs at the leadoff spot, with 26 of those himself. We know that that's obviously a record Ronald Acuña Jr. will set if he chooses to and continues to play the way he is playing, but really felt like, especially on his second home run, I think there was some frustration from the Braves over the way they played in this series against the Cardinals here in September. The Cardinals were not very good with the series to, you know, come out there and maybe sweep. They hadn't looked great. The way he celebrated on that second home run to me was just that reminder of, we're the Braves and we've got this. This is what I do and this is what we do.
I mentioned to Carl that, you know, talking with the Braves players, they said that the one statistic that seems to be being talked about in the group is Matt Olson getting to 50 home runs, which is going to be a big deal because it looks like Matt Olson has a real chance to hit more homers than anybody else in baseball this year. You mentioned Brendan Doyle with that great arm. You know, part of the conversation, Sarah, that you were a part of yesterday, and I'm sure we'll be showing some highlights on Sunday night, are, you know, the greatest throws that we've ever seen. The best one I've ever seen in person was Vladimir Guerrero Sr. in Shea Stadium against the Mets, where he threw the ball from a right field corner all the way to home plate. He threw out Todd Hundley, and it really was kind of I never forget after that game, there were a lot of things going on, but Bobby Valentine and some of the Mets were just like, oh my God, did you see that throw? Like, they were just astonished by this throw. In your mind, what's the greatest throw you've ever seen, whether you were there in person or not?
Well, I was going to say, in person, I'm not sure Todd really stand out to me. Maybe I put that on my list of things I really want to see in a game. One of these throws that just makes your jaw drop. But there are two things that I think of when you ask this. The first is those UNSS best throws that he had in his time with the A's, where he was out there buried in left field. He had that one specifically where he threw it. And everyone was so blown away. I want to say early in his career, and we're still getting to know who he was and what he did as an outfielder. And then the other thing I'll say is my dad's hero was Roberto Clemente. So even if there isn't as much footage or as many out there all the time on Twitter, those throws, everything he has sent me, just absolutely blown me away. And he had, I think, 255 career assists, which is the second most by any National League right fielder. And I'm sorry, the most by any National League right fielder and second most by any right fielder all time. And by the way, I was just looking at this yesterday. The most assists, again, this is just right field, but by any active right fielder is like 67, maybe. Like, players don't do this the way that he did that. So I'm certainly blown away by every video I've ever seen of him doing that.
One of the clips from the 1971 World Series is Clemente going and fielding catching a fly ball along the right field line and then whirling and making a throw to third base, and the base runner going from second to third. And that play for the Cincinnati Reds was Merv Rettmund, who later was the hitting coach of the Padres when I covered that team. And Sarah, I asked him about that. What do you remember about that throw? And he said as he was going into third base, because he thought it was just an easy tag, you know, tag up, go from second to third, no problem. And he could not believe it was going to be close. And Merv was fast at that time. And he was like, oh my God.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he was just shocked that Clemente, that it would even be close. You can go on YouTube if anyone wants to watch that. Merv tagging up and going from second to third and being stunned that Clemente could make that play close. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, how you doing this week?
I'm good, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing great. So I had this conversation with Carl Ravitch before about the surging Yankees. You know, our friend Peter Gammons tweeted out the other day that if the Yankees overcome the Red Sox, and they have the series coming up next week, that would mean the Red Sox would finish in last place in three of the last four seasons. In your mind, does it matter whether or not you finish in fourth or fifth place in the American League East, especially when the team you're competing against are the Yankees? How big of a deal is that for you as a Red Sox fan?
It's no big deal. Fourth place, fifth place. It doesn't matter. Shouldn't this be a team that competes for a postseason berth every single season, given their resources, given the ownership, given the expectations of the fan base? Fourth place, fifth place, it's going to be a long winter. It doesn't matter. And Buster, as you well know, this is a club that finished last a couple of times and then won the World Series the next year, which is not to say they're going to win the World Series next year, but it doesn't matter. And are the Yankees going to go far in October? I'm thinking no, considering what we've seen all season. So no, 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 no. Hard no.
Okay. I would have guessed it's the optics of it would rub you the wrong way. You know, I do think it's going to serve and it's going to whoever finishes in last place, it's going to absolutely feed into the narrative that surrounds that respective team, right? If it's the Yankees, right, the fan base will go, last place, what are we talking about? And if it's the Red Sox, it's going to be last place again.
Well, the Red Sox had Bobby Valentine steering the ship toward a last place finish and washing onto the shoals. Yankees fans probably for the most part, except for select few people who were your age, my age, and older, don't remember Stump Merrill or the horrible years of the very early 80s. So, you know, last place or not getting into the postseason, both of those are stunning things for Yankees fans. When was the last time the Yankees missed the postseason, Buster? It's a couple of years ago. But prior to then, 08, when they closed out Yankee Stadium, this is a team that's had, you know, so many consecutive years of having a winning record. Just not getting into the postseason is a big deal there. Whereas at Fenway, if you miss the postseason, well, you're going to finish last some years. I don't think it matters.
Okay. And for the record, Taylor, that's two Bobby Valentine mentions on this podcast. Two separate mentions, two separate contexts. All right. Let's get to this week's Forgotten Field.
So, Buster, the Cincinnati Reds have played ball, at the corner of Findlay Street and Western Avenue in 1884 on the site of what was previously an abandoned brickyard. On May 28th, 1900, a fire tore through the club's ballpark. This was hastily replaced with a makeshift seating arrangement that later gave way to what was one of the most startling edifices ever to host a major league team. The Palace of the Fans hosted its first game on April 17th, 1902, a neoclassical ballpark whose architecture was inspired by the 1893 World Columbian Exposition in Chicago. It featured a wildly extravagant grandstand, including 22 hand-carved Corinthian columns and a triangular pediment that read Cincinnati in all cap letters, engraved in large serif letter forms reminiscent of an imposing bank facade. The ballpark has been described as, quote, a Roman temple constructed of wrought iron and concrete. It had 19 wide semicircular concrete opera boxes at field level, essentially luxury boxes or suites by today's standards. This arrangement included stalls that allowed fans to park their horse-drawn carriages or autos directly behind their seats. The boxes were located where dugouts would customarily have gone, which meant that players had to sit on park benches. Also at field level was a standing room area called Rooters Row, and this was reserved for the Reds' most boisterous fans who could buy peanuts, hard-boiled eggs, cigars, and pickles, and where one could purchase 12 beers for $1.
Taylor, okay, stop right there.
Yeah?
Stop right there. This is right now, Taylor, this is your favorite ballpark ever. 12 beers for $1. Taylor, you there? He must be doing something else. Anyway, go ahead.
He's imagining 12 beers for $1.
He's passed out thinking about 12 beers for $1, let alone drinking them.
Yes. All right. Proximity to the players, fueled by all that cheap liquor, meant that opposing players and umpires were subjected to a constant barrage of verbal abuse, clearly heard from the other side of the chicken wire. The ballpark lasted only 10 years. It was small, featuring only 6,000 fixed seats, and despite its ornate decoration, it was fast becoming obsolete at a time when truly modern stadiums in Philadelphia, Detroit, Pittsburgh, and Boston were coming online. Within a few years of its construction, the Palace of the Fans began to deteriorate, Buster, plagued by cracked girders and unsafe support beams. Finally, a fire finished it all off. It was replaced on the same site by Redland Field, which was later known as Crosley Field, and this served as the club's home until 1970, when Riverfront Stadium opened up. Cincinnati gave birth to professional baseball in 1869, and for a decade, the Reds held forth in a palace, the Palace of the Fans, which is this week's Forgotten Field.
Wow. That I have never read about that park, Todd. Astonishing. You talk.
It's not the 12 beers for a dollar part, but the architecture, Buster. It was really quite something from all appearances.
Yeah, no kidding. Before we get with the quiz, Ted, I don't know if you're back online with us now or if you've recovered from that thought of 12 beers for $1. What was your reaction to that?
I mean, what a deal. What an absolute steal.
They didn't say what size they were, Taylor.
It doesn't matter. You know, 12 six-ouncers will do the job. You know,
12 now beers in a ballpark today, would have to, it would be like a mortgage payment.
Yikes.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
All right, I need to note that this is a pennant race on par with the AL West over here, because Buster is leading with 9, Sarah with 8.
What kind of the Texas Rangers in this mix to draw at your comparison, it feels like?
I don't know. We'll find out. It's a week-by-week thing, but it's 9 for Buster, 8 for Sarah, 7 for Taylor. So it's a jump ball, to use another metaphor from another sport. So right. I'm excited, and this is probably the best pennant race that we have had here in the history of the quiz. So without further ado, let's get to week number 26. We are going to take another baseball road trip. Remember that from a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
Which one of these journeys is the shortest in terms of miles driven? Is it A, Rogers Center in Toronto to Comerica Park in Detroit? Is it B, Progressive Field in Cleveland to the Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati? Is it C, Busch Stadium in St. Louis to Kauffman Stadium in KC? Or is it D, Tropicana Field in Tampa Bay to Lone Depot Park in Miami? The shortest, Toronto to Detroit, Cleveland to Cincinnati, St. Louis to Kansas City, or Tampa Bay to Miami?
All right. I will go first. I'm going to say A, Detroit, Toronto. Sarah, you want to go since you're in second place?
I was also going to say A, but now I'm going to say C.
Taylor?
I'm going to go A as well.
Well, Taylor and Buster are correct, because yes. Rogers Center in Toronto to Comerica Park in Detroit, 230 miles. Sarah, you were close. I mean, they're all close. 241 miles.
Wow.
From St. Louis to Kansas City. Tampa to Miami, 265. And just for the record, Progressive Field to Great American Ballpark, 248 miles road trip. So,
nice. So I think my magic number is down to like 5 now. And Sarah,
wow, you dropped back,
you're now two victories behind. You're tied with Taylor.
We've got like 7 weeks left, maybe something like that. At most.
So my magic number would be, what, 6 or 7 at that point? Yeah.
Are you printing playoff tickets, Buster?
Closing in.
Do that?
He's sent the email out that's like, you know, reserve your season tickets. If we make it the playoffs, you get first crack. It's not like a full sell, but he's almost there.
You got to put a deposit down.
Yes, the deposit definitely has to go down before you can even sniff those tickets.
And it may not be refundable or 12 beers for $1. I'm not sure which.
All right, Todd, thanks for doing this.
All right, guys, thanks.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Friday. And we have to lead off with Sarah Abbott here, who was away for a week, presumably on vacation. But it sounds like things took a little bit of a turn. It's that you're a positive gal, and it seems like you did have fun. But, there were some bumps on the trip. So could you fill us in? You teased it on Wednesday.
Yes. So as I mentioned, I was pickpocketed in St. Petersburg, which didn't know that that could possibly happen to me.
I thought this was America.
They stole my phone and wallet, which was super nice of them. Really glad that they did that. And then went to Disney, found out at Disney our flights were canceled because there's a lovely hurricane. And we spent the whole day watching movies after that, boarded up the house. And it was a great eventful trip.
It will be a vacation that you'll never forget, Sarah. Tell me, how did you get pickpocketed?
That's a really great question. So I had a little purse that was attached to my hip the whole time. And I guess somehow someone unzipped it and took out my phone and wallet, which, man, I have to give them props. Like, for me to not notice that, they're pretty gifted at their craft. So shout out to them. I hope they're having a really great day. I really do.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry that you went through that. Was the hurricane scary?
Oh, not for us. Like where we were at, it was honestly just like a thunderstorm. But we had a really great day of watching movies. We decided our genre for the day was family fun hurricane theme. So we watched Aquamarine, and then my mom decided we should watch Cocaine Bear as a family with Grammy. So that was really fun.
What was her reaction to Cocaine Bear, your grandmother?
Honestly, she was laughing. Grammy, like, had a good sense of humor about it. My mom was like, I had no idea this movie was going to be like this, which I don't know exactly what she was expecting from Cocaine Bear, but let the record show, it was my mom's idea.
Sounds like a good time. Good time had by all, except maybe your mom while watching Cocaine Bear. But how you doing now, Sarah? Have you recollected your identity at all? Are you trying to shake off the trip?
I did cancel all my credit cards, so that was no biggie. Ugh. And then I was gifted with a lovely sinus infection upon arrival back to my apartment. So the trifecta. No, Beth.
I think the travel gods are telling you, you need to take another trip to wipe that one out of your memory.
Yeah. You know what? I think so too. I think my vacation day shouldn't account. I should contact someone at Disney and say, I need those back.
And if in fact we get Phillies and Cubs in the first round of the playoffs in Philadelphia, I think we need to make a trip there for that.
Yes. Definitely.
Lifelong Phillies fan as of 1 year ago. Coming up on the 1 year anniversary.
I know. Big day for us. Big day for me and the Phillies.
Well,
speaking of the Phillies,
great segue because we got a question here from PK Steinberg. He writes in, what do you think will happen with Rhys Hoskins, first base and the Phillies? What are they going to do next year? Does Harper's play encourage the team not to re-sign Hoskins?
So my guess, and this is all speculation at this point, first off, obviously for Rhys Hoskins, who's a free agent after this year, missing the whole season, not exactly the perfect way to go into free agency. It's probably going to be good for him to go on to sign a 1 year deal for next year, which makes it more likely that he would return to the Phillies. My guess is that Bryce Harper returns to the outfield. He's had more time to work on his throwing. They put Kyle Schwarber at DH because Kyle Schwarber's defense, according to metrics, going way down, and they re-sign Rhys Hoskins. That if Rhys Hoskins, was in a position to get a multi-year deal, I think he would be gone. But given the fact he's going to need a one-year deal to reestablish his value, I think it makes it more likely he goes back to the Phillies. Does that make sense, Taylor?
Yeah, absolutely. Love when you put your GM cap on like that.
Thank you.
Let's go to, we got this one in this morning, Nathan Vest. He writes, in Buster and others have mentioned Diaz in the mix for the rookie of the year, but he and Chaz McCormick still get inconsistent playing time, despite having two of the best OPSs on the team and are on pace for 30 plus home runs if playing a full season. What are your thoughts on Dusty's logic behind not playing these guys as much as Nathan thinks they should?
Yeah, Dusty's getting some scrutiny in Houston for not playing them on a daily basis. With McCormick, for example, last weekend, he pinch hit John Singleton for him in a big spot, and people wondering why that was, because McCormick's had really good production. Dusty mentioned to reporters, I think it was yesterday or the day before, he said he's not one of the big guys yet. That Chaz McCormick still has something to prove. In Diaz's case, I want to just say flat out, like, I've watched games. I think Diaz is a terrific talent. You know, I talked to him after the game last Saturday. He seems like someone who's got a bright future in baseball. I will say, when I watch games, I see moments when I'm like, boy, if Maldonado was catching, it would be different, because he's so much better at framing. And I also think that he's really good at ushering pitchers through, you know, tough moments. That takes time. And so I actually think that Diaz, a great future, a great mentor, and I can also understand why in big games Dusty would want Maldonado behind the plate, rather than the guy who clearly is a better offensive player in Diaz. I get it.
Next up, JB Dominguez. He writes in, how cool is it we may get three teams from the NL Central in the playoffs? I bet no one had that in their preseason predictions. Got to root for something since my Rangers are disappointing me. But I don't know that I would I'd count those chickens quite yet, because the Reds, they are a half game back from that last spot, as are the Marlins, and the Diamondbacks occupy that last wild card spot. Which of those three teams do you think is going to sneak in there, assuming the Cubs and the Phillies make it?
Yeah, and I'm to the larger point, I completely agree. It's a complete shock
yeah.
that the National League Central would have that many teams. You know, at the beginning of the year, it felt like, okay,
NL
there's
going to
be probably two teams. We figured the Mets would be in the playoffs, right? And that the National League Central will be lucky to get one. But the Cubs are a lot better than what we thought. The Reds are a lot better than what we thought. And you know what? The Brewers are better than what I thought they were going to be. So I think the larger point, I agree. In terms of who's going to make the playoffs, I go back and forth. The Diamondbacks, you know, it's had some pitching injuries down the stretch here. They just called up this young shortstop who made a terrific play yesterday. I think I'm going to go with the Reds to make the playoffs in the end.
Ooh, I like it. Spicy.
So I do think they're going to be three teams out of the Central, which would be a stunner.
Yeah, for sure. All right, last one for today. Steven Shulman at Pro Bono Dude writes in, 45 years on, 1,750 miles southwest, history repeated itself. The Boston Massacre echoes in the Alamo, onslaught by the Astros against the Rangers. If history continues to repeat, though, the Rangers will rise from this guy, Steven, taking it hard. The Rangers collapse here.
And it is a collapse. Mm-hmm. And I don't see how it's going to reverse. I feel like Captain Obvious, you're like, boy, it's not looking good for a team that's losing every game and getting destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, allowing 50 run in three games. I just don't know what's going to turn around. And what's kind of a bummer, Taylor, is that, you know, the Rangers have 76 wins. If they didn't win another game, they would make like a double-digit improvement over last year. And yet it feels like that if they don't make the playoffs, it's going to be looked at as a disappointment.
Oh, yeah. Huge disappointment. I mean, for a long time, I mean, they felt like the most fun team to watch in baseball, you know, maybe right behind the Braves. So, I mean, to really spiral downward like this is a huge bummer.
It's a complete and utter shock. And think about, last year, the Texas Rangers won. I'm looking this up now. Last year, they were 60-102. So they've already had a 16-game improvement.
Huge.
Over last year. Excuse me. They were 68-94. So they've had an 8-game improvement over 2022. Let's say they finish with 85 wins. That would be an improvement of almost 20 wins. And yet, it's just not going to look the same after the way this year played out. Kind of a bummer.
All right. Hang in there, Steven. Hang in there, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets over the weekend while you're watching games and you're not watching football. I'm not watching football. No way, Buster. I would never betray the podcast like that.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. That's it for today. That's it for this week. My thanks to Carl, Sarah, Todd, Bruce, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.